Christmas usually evokes vivid recollections of childhood, memories of brightly wrapped gifts, festive family gatherings, snowy winter nights. And for commentator Kevin Kling, unadulterated fear.
There was never a time I felt further from fear than Christmas Eve riding in the way back of a 1965 Impala station wagon. Mom and Dad in the front, my sister in the back, and me in the way back, surrounded by blankets, wrapping paper, packages, and my younger brother, who was tolerable when he slept. We're going from Minnesota to Missouri to our grandparents' farm where Grandmother waits worried sick until we arrive, and as night falls, we enter Centerville, Iowa, the blinking light streaming down from the courthouse spire to the four corners of the courtyard. We pull into a Texaco filling station for gas. Now, it's a little more expensive at Texaco, but with every fill-up, you receive a free Texaco Star Theater Christmas album. Bing Crosby, Johnny Mathis, Nat King Cole, Doris Day, star after star, and every year a different star tackles the drummer boy. Oh, that cute little Patsy Cline, she makes me cry. How tragic, says Mom. Oh, no, Dad, says, you're thinking of Connie Francis. Oh, maybe I am, says Mom, but she makes me cry, makes me cry, makes me. My brother sees a Volkswagen, yells, slug bug, and punches me in the arm. Fair enough. I ask him if he's interested in real estate and give him a couple of acres. The boys are fighting. My sister doesn't even look up from her book. Knock it off, you don't make me come back there. My dad keeps his eyes on the road. We stop fighting. Neither one of us want to make my dad come back there. And with the rear window framing moonlit Iowa like a black and white photograph, I pray to Jesus to remind God to ask Santa about that squirrel monkey in the back of Spider-Man for $9.99, and I want a good monkey, not like the neighbor's monkey who had no sense of modesty, according to my mother, and not sea monkeys, I remind him. Those are a ripoff. Squirrel monkey. Now, earlier I had bribed my brother to ask my dad how much he loved me. Well, we love Kevin a lot. $9.99? Do you love him $9.99? He is not getting a squirrel monkey. But in my prayer, I feel I've gotten through to the reasonable Jesus, and soon visions of a squirrel monkey for $9.99 dance in my head. And when I wake up, it's Christmas morning. Puh, puh. I'm spitting puh, puh out little puh pieces of yarn puh from under a pink chenille bedspread. It's the upstairs of the farmhouse where my grandparents live, and I wake up my brother and we run downstairs, the plastic feet pad of our pajamas slapping the oak floor. Grandpa grabs me and kisses me with that stubbly farm boy beard taking off a layer of facial epidermis. Then grandmother comes in for a kiss. Ah! Grandmother! Grandmother's earlobes scared me. They were huge, you bangy earlobes. She'd worn clip-on earrings her whole life, and they'd really taken their toll. She hugs me tight, calls me by my brother's name, and says how much I've grown. Grandmother smells like every flower I've ever smelt all at once. Presents! What are we doing? There's presents under the tree. Presents to be unwrapped. That's why we're here, for heaven's sake. We run into the living room. My sister is the elf that year, because she can read, and it's slow and tedious. She needs to sound out every word, and all of us can guess the name even before she's done, but she hangs in there till the last minute. Grandmother. She hands grandmother a present. It's a Russian fur hat from my dad, who claims he got it for grandpa and the boxes were mixed up. Oh, but she won't give it up. She puts on the Russian hat and she looks good to me, like a Siberian empress with huge earlobes denoting royal blood. Then I dive into my boxes, first opening all the presents that is in a box shaped like one of my brother's presents. Then I hold it up and show him what he is about to receive. Then comes presents from Mom and Dad, because that's usually something I need, like clothes. Then the last is Santa's present, always the best. Santa knows me. He knows the me of me. And I tear into the wrapping paper, and I reveal a box which holds a plastic World War II P-40B fighter plane, a flying tiger with a real gas-powered engine, hand controls, and two-string guidance system, a decal of a vicious open mouth in front and squinty eyes. Oh, this is not a toy. This is something a man would play with. My brother and sister are likewise in heaven. My sister is sitting with a Chatty Cathy doll who talks when you pull its string, having some kind of conversation. And my brother is in the corner twisting his new G.I. Joe, making screaming noises. I look at my dad, and he's smiling at me. My dad, the pilot in real life, and my dad is proud.
After dinner, Kev, what do you say we fire it up?
And that's when the fear sets in. With my dad standing there, I was going to have to fly that plane. Now, I don't know how to fly a plane. I know my dad could fly it. I even know my brother could fly it, but I know I can't. I know it. I will crash. I do not have the right stuff, and I know it. Now, I don't know how many of you subscribe to the theory of predestination. I, for one, am a firm believer. I came across it during a reading of Tristram Shandy, where the protagonist, or Tristram Shandy, describes his conception. Now, apparently, at the beginning of each month, his father, Lord Shandy, performed two tasks. One was to wind the family clock, and the second was to perform his, husbandly duties with his wife, Lady Shandy. And it was during part two of said ritual, and in fact at the moment of truth, that Lord Shandy suddenly realized he'd forgot to wind the clock. And it was due to this moment of indecision, this most inopportune moment, this moment of his conception, that Tristram Shandy attributes his own indecisiveness in life and his need to sometimes fall off course. My own conception, I found out years ago, was at the same time Pope Pius XII was entertaining Liberace at the Vatican. Liberace called it the single most inspirational moment of my life. Lord only knows what the Pope was thinking. But I digress. Anyway, if you subscribe to the theory of predestination, which I do, and couple it with the unfortunate astrological phenomena of Pisces with Aquarius rising, me, it all leads to an overly sensitive, truth-seeking pencil neck that will never get this plane off the ground. After dinner, my dad and I take the plane outside. Okay, Kev, let's see what this SOB can do. He fires up the engine. The prop spins and the engine whines like it is in pain. I want to faint, but I know I have to pay attention because I am next. Dad pulls on a control string and the warbird rolls along the ground. He then pulls on another string and the plane leaves the runway. Dad circles the plane around our heads a few times, then pulls the controls again. The plane goes straight up in the air, sputters, turns, and mayday, 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 crashes into the ground into a million pieces. I look over at my dad. He's looking at the controls. Well, obviously, that is where the fault lies. And then, all of a sudden, we both start cracking up. We are laughing our heads off. Now, I don't know why my dad is laughing, but I know why I am. I don't have to crash my plane. My dad did it for me. My brother comes out to observe the wreckage. He is very impressed. I mean, rarely did one of our toys survive Christmas Day. I mean, my brother's G.I. Joe was a vet an hour after he owned it. The string on my sister's doll was jammed all the way out, making their conversation a bit one-sided, but that seemed fine to my sister. "Well, Kev," says Dad, "I happen to know where Santa got that plane, so we can get you another one." Or a squirrel monkey?
Kevin Kling performs and writes plays in Minnesota, comes to us with help from Minnesota Public Radio.